Today's show is sponsored by Talkspace, the online therapy company. For a fraction of the price of traditional therapy, you can pick an experienced, licensed therapist you relate to and feel comfortable with. Each and every therapist has at least a master's degree and has completed over 3,000 hours of supervised work. To match with your perfect therapist, go to Talkspace.com/boom. And to show your support for this podcast, use code BOOM to get $30 off your first month. That's BOOM, Talkspace.com/boom, B-O-O-M.
You are Locked On Raptors, your daily Toronto Raptors podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hey there, and welcome to episode 71 of Locked On Raptors for Thursday, January 26th. I'm your host, Sean Woodley of RaptorsHQ.com and TSN Radio in Toronto. You can find me on Twitter, as always, at WoodleySean, and the show is on Twitter as well, at Locked On Raptors, where you can find links to every single show. As you know by now as well, Locked On Raptors is part of the Locked On Podcast Network, where you can find team-specific shows for all 30 NBA teams, as well as Locked On Fantasy with Josh Lloyd, and Locked On NBA, the big show with David Locke. David had George Karl this week on the show, so make sure you check that out. And that's all on the Locked On Podcast Network, the Locked On NBA channel on iTunes. It's the easiest way for you to get a huge amount of content to absorb about the NBA. Just an endless stream of stuff there. Obviously, the NFL shows as well. The Locked On NFL channel has everything you're going to need for the Super Bowl coming up with the Falcons and Patriots shows. And if your team is out, the Locked On NFL draft show is a great resource as well. You can also find our show, Locked On Raptors, on iTunes as well, where you can leave a rating, leave a review. It's the easiest possible way to show your support for the show. Helps to boost us up the rankings, helps people discover the show, and I'd really appreciate any and all feedback that you leave on the page there. Anyone who's left a comment so far, really appreciate that. You are the best, all of you are the best. You all can't be the best, but you're tied for the best. On today's show, I have Scott Hasty, who is the editor-in-chief of The Silhouette, which is McMaster University's student newspaper. For our purposes, he's a contributor to Raptors Republic. I believe he's done some coaching and things like that with McMaster's basketball team as well. Very smart guy, and he wrote a piece this week about Jonas Valanciunas and his pick-and-roll defense and how it's a constant struggle for him, focusing on the last couple games, or two games earlier in the week against the Charlotte Hornets on Friday and then the Suns on Sunday. Lots of great gifts and clips for you to check out in there, so go to RaptorsRepublic.com and check it out. It was a nice chat with Scott. We just kind of chatted about JV's defense for 20-something minutes. It was, very niche and very specific, but if you're interested in sort of the ins and outs of Jonas Valanciunas' defense and what he struggles with and what he, excels at when he's asked to, when he has nice moments, what is he doing well in those moments? This is the conversation for you, and Scott's a really smart guy. Glad I could get him on the show to talk about his piece. I will get to that right now. I won't come back on the other side. There's no game or anything for me to preview. I'll have a preview show tomorrow afternoon to preview the Milwaukee Bucks game. Hopefully the Raptors can finally get back on track with that one. Obviously, five straight losses is not great, but there's a chance, I guess, tomorrow. We're not sure if DeMar DeRozan's going to be back just yet, but hopefully he makes his return pretty soon too as well, because the Raptors miss him, and Kyle Lowry is getting beaten up right now, and it'd be nice to not have that happen very long, because we saw what happened when DeMar DeRozan was out for an extended period of time 2 months ago, and not having Kyle Lowry be the focal point of the offense night after night and going to the rim 20 times a night, that'd be a good thing. We'll preview that game tomorrow, and maybe we'll have some clarity on whether DeRozan will be available. It's the Raptors, so wouldn't hold your breath, but that's what we'll do tomorrow. So yeah, I'll get to the conversation now with Scott. Thanks so much for listening. You can follow me on Twitter at WoodleySean. The show is on Twitter as well, at Locked On Raptors, as I mentioned off the top. Thank you so much, and let's enjoy the conversation with Scott Hasty from Raptors Republic and The Silhouette. Okay, joining me on Locked On Raptors to chat about his piece this week on Raptors Republic, a part-time contributor to Raptors Republic, as well as the editor-in-chief of The Silhouette, which is McMaster University's student paper. It's Scott Hasty. How you doing, man?
I'm fantastic. How about you?
I'm great. Your piece was really good. It kind of broke down in very plain and simple terms why Jonas Valanciunas is so rough on defense and sort of the heart of his struggles. And I kind of just wanted to get you on to talk about it, because you obviously seem to have a pretty good grasp on what's going on there. Just so for people who didn't read the piece, and you should definitely read the piece on Raptors Republic, can you just kind of give people sort of a roundabout sort of, what's at the heart of Jonas Valanciunas' struggles on defense, and especially when it comes to defending the pick and roll?
Yeah, so the genesis of this was the game against the Hornets. I was watching that, and I just saw JV getting cooked almost every time where there was a high screen and roll involving JV and oftentimes Lowry as well. Mm-hmm. So I saw him getting just cooked, and Kemba's a fantastic player, but I thought he's not even giving them a chance. But so I wanted to write about kind of what I was seeing from him, and I know that the Raptors have changed the scheme. I think it was a couple years ago, right, where it was kind of like, look, JV, he doesn't have the foot speed to do the things we want him to do, mm-hmm. so we have to tweak this, and that's why you see the Raptors now go with a really conservative, all right, we're just going to go over the screen, JV, hang back, inherit the ball handler, but it's giving guys a running start, and JV doesn't use his length or his frame really to stop anybody.
Yeah.
So he's giving guys a runway. It's funny to watch from the outside, I think. Where it's coming from is really that Hornets game, and then the game against the Suns wasn't great either. But
yeah, he definitely has some issues in terms of, you know, trying to balance how far he's going to come out to try to challenge shooters, because that is the thing, right? When you're going up against guys like Kemba Walker who can kill you with the pull-up shot coming around the screen, it becomes a lot harder to just sort of accept that JV is going to stay back, right? But if he comes up too far, he's just going to get blown by anyway. It's a tough balance for him. And yeah, they kind of changed the system. 2 years ago when they were really awful on defense, I think they finished 23rd, they were a lot more aggressive. They had JV hedge really high pretty frequently, and he could just never recover back in time. Last season with Andy Greer, they kind of went more to the Tibbs style of icing pick and rolls and kind of, you know, just letting JV sort of be more conservative. And this season, it's kind of fluctuated back and forth, I think. I think you can definitely see that the influence of Greer isn't quite there the way it was last year. And there are times where, you know, JV's coming up a lot higher on the pick and roll, and he's getting cooked doing it, as you talked about. I mean, what have you noticed? Do you think there's this sort of change from, you know, having him be more conservative this year, and is it hurting him as well?
Yeah, I don't know if it's like a wholesale change. It does look like he's lost a little bit of where he's supposed to be. Mm-hmm. I know against the Hornets, I think Kemba's first shot was a three when Lowry went under a ball screen, which I'm not surprised. A lot of teams that I've seen will kind of like say, yeah, let's go under until he hits a couple on us, and then we'll adjust from there, mm-hmm. just to see if you can bait a guy into something that isn't a great look. So they went under, Kemba hits the first one, and then they immediately start going over the screen and dropping JV, but he struggles because he doesn't have his hands up and he doesn't get set. Mm-hmm. So I see him, he'll go out and then he'll start coming back, and it's unclear. I'm like, well, what are you doing here? Because they will blitz or hedge sometimes, but then he goes up and comes back, and it's like, if you're a 7 foot guy and you're backpedaling against Eric Bledsoe or Devin Booker, and you're supposed to contain that with just two people, yeah, it's not going to work. And that's what the Raptors want to do. They just want to keep it with two guys. They don't really want to invite that backside, weak side defender to come over for help. Mm-hmm. But you have to almost now. That's what I'm seeing with JV. He can't figure out where he's supposed to be for each individual guy he's supposed to defend against. So, yeah, the other caveat to this, though, is you can see it with Lowry. Recently, I think he's getting a little tired. Mm-hmm. Fatigue of the season. He's doing a bad job of getting over screens, so that if JV even does hold him up, you can, like, Kemba has that extra time to get a little dribble move off, and there's nobody on his hip forcing Kemba to kind of just look in the blindside mirror or something like that. He's just not, like, Kyle was really not doing a great job of getting over the screens, but you really just want JV to kind of clog this up. Show your hands. Don't make it easy for him. But if you watch those almost every time, even if it was Corey Joseph or Terrence Ross or Norm Powell guarding one of those guys, it was just open laneway, and he was going to take off. They're too fast. So,
yeah,
it's not a new problem for JV, but it's one that looks particularly bad given those recent injuries.
Yeah, for sure. It's never just Jonas, and I think that kind of is what the conversation becomes a lot of the time, where if the defense looks bad, a lot of people just point at Jonas and blame him. But there's definitely sort of things going on all over the place. I mean, you mentioned Lowry having trouble getting over screens. Corey Joseph has been, you know, after being one of the better guys I've ever seen at fighting through screens last year, this year he just doesn't look like he has it. I don't know what it is, but it, maybe he can get it back, who knows. But, like, there are definitely other things going on that are, you know, leading to JV sort of being stuck in the middle and not having as much help around him as you would like. But it's not encouraging that he can't, you know, just even get the basic sort of things down. And that's where I kind of think that maybe there's just kind of mixed messaging as to what the scheme actually is, because you do see sort of the strategy kind of changes, you know, time to time and throughout games. Whereas in the past, it's just kind of been like, even when a couple years ago when they were really bad defensively and doing that really aggressive, you know, hedging scheme, at least it was consistent. They were doing it pretty much every time. It just, it doesn't seem like there's any consistency with it this year.
Yeah. So, and a good example of that I found for the piece was against Bledsoe, I think it was late in the fourth quarter, where JV and Kyle are defending a pick and roll between Chandler and Lowry. Chandler comes up, flips on the screen, and then just dives, so he doesn't really actually make any contact with Kyle, and Kyle's on the hip of Bledsoe, but JV keeps going back. He keeps shuffling backwards. And it was like, I'm not sure if JV really called out what they were going to do on that, because some teams will just give that big man the opportunity to whatever the code word is. Maybe it's a color, maybe it's just, they'll say ice, but they'll give him that opportunity. And it was like, JV, what are you doing if you're guarding, like if you're sticking with Chandler and you're not really picking up, but Kyle's on the guy's hip? Kyle gambled a bit, but he got so deep, it was like, well, what? You're totally out of position. Your hands aren't up. You're doing kind of neither. So that one was one where I totally agree, where I was like, what were you trying to get out of this? Like, what was your goal? But I don't know. I think for JV, they'll probably want to go just a bit simpler, and they'll say, this is the same thing just every time, just to get it through. But we'll see. There's a lot of time left for them to figure it out, but with guys like Bebe behind him, I don't know if they're really going to spend that much time figuring it out.
Yeah, I want to ask you about sort of how Bebe compares to Jonas in terms of how he goes about defending the pick and roll, because Bebe isn't perfect either. He definitely sort of, he still has sort of miscues and gaffes when he's just kind of, he's a good rim protector. He can get to the basket to stop shots and kind of get back in position and recover when he gets out of position, but he definitely has sort of, you know, errors here and there. But how does he differ in terms of Jonas? Like, if you're seeing the same pick and roll, like, how would you sort of differentiate how Bebe goes about guarding it and how Jonas does it?
I would say Bebe, he doesn't play like he knows he's going to get beat.
Mm-hmm.
And JV does. JV, like, compensates. He's like, I'm a lumbering seven-footer who's great in the post on offense and a bully around the rim on offense. And then Bebe's like, hey, I'm really tall and I'm long as hell, and I'm gonna try and maximize those two things. So his positioning, as far as like where his hands are and his footwork, they're a little bit further along than JV when I watch, just because you see a lot more guys, granted it's Bebe going against some of the backups, but you see guys do that like hesitation dribble in, and then they're like, okay, I gotta make a pass because I didn't do enough to compromise the defense, and I'm really not gonna get a good shot trying to go around Baby and his go-go gadget arms, right? So, and there's one GIF. It's, I think, at the first one that I have in my piece, and you can see JV do this thing where, like, he picks up a foul because he tags Kemba on the other side of the rim because he's just sprawling with his hand.
Mm-hmm.
And where Baby's better is, he knows that if I just put my hands up in that situation, I don't need to block it. Like, I'm such a pest. My length is so bothersome that, like, I just need to put myself out there. And JV's more like, I need to actually block the ball. So I think those are the couple major areas that maybe he's a little bit more confident in, knowing that I can stop guys with my length from even driving, and I can bother their shots without making contact on the ball. JV struggles in both those areas.
Yeah, I mean, you see it just kind of bear out in the numbers. When Baby's on the floor, the Raptors are typically a pretty good defensive team, and obviously, when Jonas is out there, things are more difficult. But the thing with Jonas that's weird is that he, like, whether or not he's effective or his defensive numbers are good kind of depends on who he's playing with. Like, he's not like a guy like Bebe where the numbers are just kind of always good, or Patterson where they're just kind of always good. You know, against when he's paired with guys like Pascal Siakam or Jared Sullinger, things get really ugly. But when he's with guys like, you know, Patrick Patterson, like we saw in the Spurs game for a big chunk of that game, or even or even this like the lineup they used to close the Spurs game with, you know, JV on the floor, it was four wings, and they were I noticed they were doing a really good job of trying to like switch all the off ball action that the Spurs were doing, and there wasn't a ton of penetration going, and the Spurs weren't really pulling up JV a lot to you know pull him into the pick and roll.
That surprised me.
Yeah, it was bizarre, but the Raptors did a pretty good job of limiting penetration there. But what is it about JV that he sort of is lifted up by certain guys and just can't cope when he's with other lineups? Is it just kind of human nature? Like, if you're stuck with a bad defender next to you, it's going to be a problem? Or, like, what is it that he kind of can get by with when he's next to a guy like Patterson, for example?
That's a good question. I think JV's role is maybe a little bit clearer in those situations where you're trying to make sure that he's not getting involved in the pick and rolls. You switch it where you can so that JV just is on the guy who's supposed to be in the dive or the dunker spot, picking guys up and keeping him around the rim. That's what I can imagine, because, like, if you watch the start of that Charlotte game again, I swear, like, six straight possessions, JV's involved in a screen, whether it's, like, off the ball, and they just bring a guy up, they screen the screener, or something like that. It's just, it's crazy the gauntlet of screens and actions that they just put JV through as an defender to see if he can figure it out. And if he can kind of like, oh yeah, this is the next step after I get over this, if I get over this. So I think the reason he does a little bit better is because the Raptors have some more flexibility with Patterson to kind of just adjust and say, Patterson, okay, you take this guy if they're going to use him as a screener. I don't know if that's a perfect answer. I'd have to be a lot more critical when I'm watching those things, because it's not something I've watched, especially when, if he's being fine, it's not as egregious. You don't really think about his defense.
Yeah.
But, yeah, if they're just like, hey, JV, stick around the rim, bully a guy, maybe, like, bother a shot and grab some boards, that's his role.
And even maybe just, like, little things, too. This might not have anything to do with it, but, like, Patterson is very vocal and loud on the floor, and maybe he's better at vocalizing what coverages they're supposed to be running and what JV's supposed to be doing. Maybe he's just a better director on the floor than some of the other guys there. It could be just as simple as that. I mean, you can audibly hear it when Patterson's on the floor compared to other guys. I mean, that's a tiny thing, and that might mean nothing, but, like, it's hard to sort of decipher what's going on there. I want to ask you...
Given the communication issues like we kind of talked about earlier, I think if Patterson's a better communicator, it would make sense.
Yeah, for sure. So I have to ask you, because the JV debate is something that every time there's a Raptors loss, Raptors Twitter devolves into two sides, where it's like, oh, JV needs to be getting more touches. And then the other side is, well, JV can't play defense, so why would you have him out on the floor? And it becomes a big, you know, existential Jonas Valanciunas debate. I don't know. I tend to come down in the middle of it. I think if the Raptors are in need of offense, if their offense is really sputtering, then, you know, maybe you have to try to live with JV's sort of defensive flaws and maybe work through the offense through him. But I think the Raptors overall have been good enough on offense this season that, you know, if JV's playing bad defensively, I don't really see the point in keeping him out there. Yeah, you want him to learn and things like that, but I just don't see the usefulness in keeping him on the floor when you have a guy like Bebe who can keep the offense humming when he's out there, sometimes offer even a little bit more utility in the offense because he's a lob threat and because he can move the ball along a lot better than JV can at this point. And I just think, just play the guys who are playing well and going to help you win that game, and not so much focus on, oh man, we got to get JV those touches and develop him so he can be, you know, whatever sort of untapped superstar some people seem to think he is. Where do you come down on it? Are you sort of like, I think, most of the reasonable people, sort of somewhere in the middle, or are you just kind of on the side of, you know, if JV is playing poorly, just get him out of there?
It is a development conversation, right? But I think, at what point has the development train left the station? Like, when is a guy, when is he what he's going to be? And for me, if you're not seeing development, then you kind of got the answer to your question. It was frustrating, and maybe the conversation goes back to 2 years ago when you're not playing him in the fourth quarter and you're just wondering, like, how is this guy supposed to learn anything if he can't play the crunch time minutes? And then it's 2 years later and we're like, he's really bad in the crunch time minutes, we shouldn't play him. And he never had a chance to learn. But if JV's value is offense, and you know that down the stretch there's like two guys who are going to get shots, mm-hmm. and they're not JV, you really have to be critical of why you play him. He makes it a little bit harder. Teams do like to pick on him. So it is a bit easier on defense because teams know what they're going to do. So I come down for JV just saying you got to play the guy that you need in that situation. Is he defending that day? Does the matchup favor him in terms of, yeah, he's able to stay around the rim and he's going to get a rebound for you? Okay, yeah, that's awesome. Like, you're good. You're good with that. Mm-hmm. You can live with JV. But if Bebe is making his presence felt, I think there was a Knicks game earlier this year where they basically just rode Bebe the entire fourth quarter until he just totally ran out of gas. Mm-hmm. And yeah, like that's the strategy, I think, right? You roll with a guy who's being effective at what you need him to be effective at, and more times than not, that's not going to be JV, because you want to get stops down the end of the game, and he's not going to get you a ton of scores.
Yeah.
Because he's just not going to get the ball. But, I mean, if you're one of the Raptors fans that's kind of like screaming, throw it into the post because there's 3 minutes left in a game, and JV's on the court and it's like within 5 points, I don't see that being likely. We have two players we've built an offense around specifically because we don't just throw the ball into the post all the time.
Yeah, post touches are inherently inefficient. Just like get that in your head. I mean, JV's one of the better post scorers there is, and he's still like barely at a point per possession when he does it. So,
I was talking about this, and I think Will Lou tweeted about it. But if he gets good at that, and you give him more touches, you those are a limited amount of possessions. Mm-hmm. Like you can't go to the JV post up well 5 times in a row, mm-hmm. because they'll just send a double team at you and like. Jonas Valanciunas passing out of a double team is not something that you can show on TSN at 8:30. Like it's a little too dark. So
yeah, it's a weird sort of balance. It's been interesting though. The last couple games, Jonas has played crunch time. The Spurs game, he played I think the last 6 or 7 minutes after Bebe came out because he was exhausted after playing like 12 straight minutes. And like I mentioned, he played with that sort of four guard lineup that was pretty effective defensively late. And then against Memphis, he's closed the game out as well, too. Bebe got a little bit more run in the fourth, I think, if I remember correctly. But, you know, JV was in there. And, you know, what have you noticed over the last two games here where he's kind of found some success? I'm not really sure what the exact reason for it would be. Maybe it's just the fact that Patterson's out there. He didn't close the game on Tuesday, of course, against the Spurs. But I don't know what it is, but he's looked sort of... more comfortable. It looks like he hasn't been sort of pulled away from the rim all that often. Maybe this is just the fault of the teams that the Raptors are up against, where they're not trying to sort of pick on him in the pick and roll and just sort of letting him hang out near the rim, where he's pretty effective if he's in position and stationary. He's a pretty solid rim protector. But yeah, I don't know. What have you noticed the last couple of games? Does anything give you hope about what you've seen?
Yeah, I don't think the past couple of games give me much hope. Like, well, they do in that, like, I think when the matchup is fine, like it's not like a guy just raining threes, taking a bunch of shots. JV has to worry about Kemba Walker and his change of pace. Like when you're kind of dealing with a little bit more of a middle of the road for athleticism at the point guard position, you can do a little bit better. Like mm-hmm. nobody on the Spurs, nobody on the on the Grizzlies is really going to make you seriously worry about how they get to the rim. And Conley's great, but I don't think he's got the step that guys like Bledsoe or Kemba Walker have. So I like that a bit more in that you're like, okay, depending who we play, I think we might be all right in the playoffs. Then you're like, okay, wait, what's Kyrie Irving good at? And all of that logic goes out the window.
But, Isaiah Thomas, is he fast?
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, like how much did he play in games against... There was an earlier game against Boston.
He got ran off the floor in the first game in December. He ended up playing pretty well down the stretch in the second game. He actually had that block on Thomas late, but yeah, it's a tough matchup for him, right?
Yeah, and I don't know. I do think if he's able to stay closer to the rim, he feels a bit more comfortable because he's just not the focus of things. Mm-hmm. But man, if teams decide to pick on him and screen the screener stuff and just expose him, it looks bad, and that's not what I saw in those games. So maybe it's matchup dependent and what the other team is trying to get out of their offense. But pick and roll heavy teams are gonna they're going to do their damage against a guy like him. And that's just, that's fine. Like, yeah. you have to make him pay in the other way. Kind of like that Casey quote from, I don't even know how long ago now, where he's like, listen, if you're not being effective at what you're supposed to do, see you later.
Yeah, Dominator, you're not going to be out there, essentially.
Yeah. So, he was great on the glass, so...
And that's something that is defense. That is like closing out possessions. He's been awesome at that the last couple of games, so that's good. But
yeah.
There's definitely a lot of room to grow, and I guess it's nice that the Raptors have Bebe as a backup option, which I don't think most people expected Bebe to be this sort of reliable night to night. I mean, he has his ups and downs, of course, but overall he's been a really nice luxury to have, a lot like Bismack Biyombo was last year. Maybe not quite to the degree defensively, but having that out there is a nice change of pace, and it's a nice luxury to have. Scott?
Sure. I wrote about Bebe. I didn't think he would be good to start this year. I was like, I don't really see it, but it is definitely a nice thing to have.
All right, man. Scott, thank you so much for coming on the show. I really appreciate it. You're a smart dude, so I wanted to get you on to talk about your piece. Where can people find you, and where can people look for your work?
Raptors Republic is the main spot I write about the Raptors, but follow me on Twitter at Scott1Hasty. If you love McMaster student politics, that's what I've been talking about lately, because it's student politics season, so don't judge me for that. It's just I'm more sports focused, but when duty calls, you gotta fire off those tweets about student politicians. if you're into that, thestill.ca, man, great website. But yeah, Scott1Hasty on Twitter.
Awesome. Thank you, Scott. Really appreciate it, man. We'll catch up later in the year.
Okay, cool. Thanks. Napa
know-how. It takes a lot to get excited about a bag, but most bags can't save you 20% on auto parts. That's 20% off headlamps, 20% off oil filters, 20% off virtually anything you can fit inside the 99-cent Napa reusable bag. So tell your buddies, there's a bag they just have to check out. Quality parts, helpful people. That's Napa know-how. Napa know-how. At participating Napa Auto Parts stores while supplies last. Minimum 3 items. Exclusions apply. Offer ends 10/31/17.